It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Monday, April 29th, and I'm Tim Parise with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated, joined by Pete Sampson of The Athletic. The 2024 NFL draft is in the books. Notre Dame had seven players drafted, led, of course, by Joe Alt with the number five overall pick by Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers, and then Notre Dame had five free agent signings, including Bo Bauer, who's been given an opportunity. I don't know if that's as a long snapper or not. When we saw him as a long snapper, he had a long way to go. But we'll talk about that a little bit more. And, of course, Notre Dame received the huge verbal commitment from top 100 player Dellis Golden. The portal is open for a couple more days. So we'll talk about all of that in section one here, or segment one, I should say. Joe Alt I think he's going to be sensational technique-wise. The one thing I would say about him, and this was something that was mentioned to me by a longtime offensive line coach, that he was only in college for 3 years, and so he doesn't have that typical 4 or 5 years of strength. He's about to go up against a bunch of defensive end beasts in the NFL, but other than that, I think we're all pretty certain that Joe Alt's going to be a pretty great offensive tackle.
I wrote that in July. And was yelled at by every Irish Illustrated subscriber. But as it turns out, he'll be either great in his first year or his second year. Who cares? It's going to work out fine for Joe Alt. But yeah, I mean, he's a 21-year-old true junior. He's the first true junior to go pro for Notre Dame along the offensive line. And the second one is Blake Fisher. It's kind of shocking, really, when you think about that. But he's going to be great. I do agree that he'll grow into becoming much better. Think how much bigger that guy got. I'm guessing it was between 21 and 22, because other than filling out even stronger, I don't think 23 was a shock to the system. We saw him walk in August of 2022, and we were like, holy cow, when he looked at Joe Alt. And other than being tall, I don't remember that in 2021.
Yeah, that's when his dad said he really made a move as a run blocker. Drew Mentock from Irish Illustrated did a really nice interview with his dad, John Alt. I would recommend all that to our Irish Illustrated subscribers if you haven't, because it provided a great insight into Joe Alt. Pete Sampson, he's going to be pretty good, isn't he?
He's playing for Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah,
like, I mean, that's like gas on the fire. When the head coach is introducing him and he says, like, offensive linemen are weapons, like, This is why we all love Jim Harbaugh, if you could like excuse the Michigan part of it. Like, as a coach and a guy and the style of football he plays, man, I just have a very hard time seeing Joe Alt not being great at the next level in that system with that head coach. So it seems like there are no sure things, but he's pretty close to being one.
He's just so fundamentally sound. He doesn't lunge. He's always in control. When you picture in your mind Joe Alt playing offensive tackle, he's always under control of the situation. As he gets stronger, he'll get that much better. Blake Fisher late in the second round does not shock us. We knew that his measurables and his athleticism and talent was up there. I wrote a piece this morning, the final round is what it's called. And, I think that the issue that Notre Dame fans have is that too bad he never played like a second round pick for Notre Dame.
I mean, no, the Fiesta Bowl, right? I mean, he played like a second round pick.
That was a heroic heroic performance coming off the injury when he played.
It just never seemed to click for him last year. And I remember talking to a TV analyst who called one of Notre Dame's games, and he said in one of their production meetings, he asked the coaching staff, "Is Blake Fisher hurt?" Just because the level of play was not anywhere where you thought it could be for somebody as talented as him. So, yeah, I mean, look, the pro game in the draft is a potential play, and Blake Fisher has a ton of potential. And these, you know, the coaches at the next level they're there because they think they can get it out of them. So I get it. He's somebody that you feel like, all right, maybe Notre Dame will never have seen the best of Blake Fisher. Totally different circumstances, but like, you know, when Cole Kmet came through here, you're like, okay, that guy may have a better pro career than a college career. Yeah. I could see Blake Fisher be different scenario, but like similar outcome.
At the end. I remember you referenced that. It's a good point, Pete, but like Cole Kmet, the junior, was great. He was the best player on the field at Georgia. He had 7 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And he was really good. It was he was like flashed and gone. I feel like that was Cole Kmet.
You know, the thing that we knew that, you know, wasn't widely known throughout Notre Dame fandom was that Fisher made up his mind to leave when camp opened in July.
Yeah.
So, you know, having that in mind and then
I didn't know that until someone told me, like someone that knows Blake Fisher.
Yeah.
On our subscriber is how I found out about Blake Fisher. I was like, are you kidding me?
that reminds me a little more of DeShone Kizer, because DeShone Kizer made up the decision to leave before the 2016 season started. I just don't like, if that's your mentality going into the year, I just don't think that ever. That rarely plays well for an underclassman.
Very difficult to reach your potential with that kind of mindset going into the season. And that was the case with Blake Fisher. But hey, he won. He is a winner today, this past weekend, because he was picked in the second round. And you know, hope it all works out. Now, Maris Leifau, I think, is a quintessential Jerry Jones reach.
Yeah, because he's I would like Maris Leifau. If you, someone says we took Leifau in the 5th or 6th round, I'm like, oh, good job. That's a great call. You're going to get something out of this guy for sure. And then all of a sudden, you're like, holy smokes, that's early. It just seems. Now, if he ends up being a good player, it's fine. But most of the time, the point about the reach and everybody says, well, you can make it irrelevant if you're good. Well, no, because you could have had somebody else right there that was good and then gotten Maris Leifau later. That's why
they didn't have a fourth. Yeah, they didn't have a 4th round pick. Yeah. They had a 5th round pick. Maybe they didn't think that he would be around. But to look at Maris Leifau's entire game, and this is why I argued in 2022 when somebody in the know said he was not a good athlete. He played the way he played in 2022 because he had a catastrophic injury for the start of the 21 season. It wasn't an ACL or an Achilles, but the leg break was really severe. Everybody knew it. And he just didn't play to his potential in 22. Now he reached it to a large extent in 23, but I thought it kind of dissipated as the season went on, and maybe he was banged up or something late in the year, but he flashed. When he flashed, he was really good, but I didn't think that it was consistent throughout the season.
Again, it's similar story to Blake Fisher. The NFL is a potential game. And if you said that Maris Leifau has a higher potential than JD Bertrand, I wouldn't stand on the table and say, like, you're wrong. That's crazy. Obviously, one was way more productive at Notre Dame than the other, but I could understand why a scout might look at Leifau and be like, all right, this is a guy we think we can grow into something. But still, yeah, third round was about. I mean, if you look at Dane Brugler, our analyst on The Athletic, he pretty much nailed every round of every Notre Dame player, with the huge exception of Leifau, who he had in a 5th or 6th round, and he goes in the 3rd.
And the best possible value, if he stays healthy, is, of course, Cam Hart. That's kind of like the you feared you were right. Like, it's for 2 years we've been thinking, wait till he shows up and those medicals pop in and the three shoulder surgeries are in there. It's just he was drafted in a great round for. If he's hurt, a GM doesn't get fired because they got him in the right round. He's a much better player than the 5th round. But look, think of it this way. And I'm not even sure if this means anything. He got a stinger in the postseason game. And I thought, oh my God, is his career over? Like, you can't be looking at every play like that with Cam Hart coming up to hit somebody. That is part of the sport now.
Yeah, no doubt. I right before the draft, I threw out real quick predictions, and I wanted to, you know, like, look, all things being equal, like, if there's no injuries, he's at worst second round, and he may be first round because of his length. And then what he did at the Senior Bowl or in the combine or
Senior Bowl, he was good. He was great at the Senior Bowl, and then he got hurt.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, you know, I mean, it's all medicals in his situation. Great value in fifth round. I agree. I also, one of our subscribers made that comment that second round, what are you talking about? A GM would get fired. And I get that. I just want to be, if one team said, you know what, we love this kid, he's outstanding, we're going to go for it, I want to be right in that situation. But he fell to the fifth, and that's about right. You know, just because of the medicals. But JD Bertrand in Atlanta, again, he was such a good player at Notre Dame. And in 2021, he was playing out of position and injured. We knew that, but, you know, it isn't talked about enough, or it isn't emphasized. And on game day, you just look at, okay, why was he late to that play? And you know, you don't consider that he's playing the wrong position. But when he was healthy and playing well, he was outstanding. He made the defense better. He was as instrumental in making Al Golden's defense great as anybody out there. And he gets to go. He's from Georgia, and he gets to play for the Falcons, or he gets a shot at making the Falcons as a fifth rounder. But who's going to – nobody's cutting J.D. Bertrand.
Oh, he's – yeah, if he's not injured, he's making the Falcons there.
Yeah, he's you know, just happy for him. Because, I look at J.D. Bertrand and I say, man, Notre Dame fans should gravitate to a guy like that, because he's everything that you could ask for in a leader and a team first guy. Good for him. Good for him.
As a huge Falcons fan myself, just looking over their roster, I'm just wondering which backup linebackers are going to get cut.
Yeah.
Because J.D. Bertrand's going to work him out of a job. Unfortunately, Ade Ogundeje is there, so I'm a little concerned about that one. But
he had a very disjointed 2023 season. So
I'm
sure his future is of the Falcons. He's been around for a few years, but look, we all know that Audric Estime, the ninth running back chosen in the draft, is more talented than the round that he was selected in. But that's life as a running back. I love Marshawn Lynch, the big back that was at South Carolina, didn't play against Notre Dame in the bowl game, and then transferred to USC and probably didn't get as many touches as he could have at other places. I love Marshawn. Did I say Lynch? I meant Lloyd.
Marshawn Lynch was
good. I really love Marshawn.
Yeah, Lynch. Really like Marshawn Lynch.
Really love him too. But Estime is, you know, again, the ninth running back pick. He's way better than that, and a great value for the Broncos in the fifth round.
I think we talked about this prior. I really like Estime's pro potential. I liked Kyren Williams' pro potential more, and then Kyren Williams was better than I thought he would be. So if that keeps trending up for Estime, I mean, I loved Kyren Williams. I really wanted the 49ers to draft Kyren Williams in that draft. But he's still better than I thought he would be.
Yeah.
He was the best running back in the league for 10 games last year, most productive running back in the league.
Yeah. But I mean, it's evidence of why you don't need to draft a running back very high, right? You know, if you can get the best running back in the league in the fifth round, just keep doing that, because that seems to be what everyone else.
What was Kyren Williams' 40 time?
He got around what Estime ran at Notre Dame. They all run decent when they come to Notre Dame.
Yeah,
he looked fast against North Carolina.
Yeah, he looks fast when he plays football in the NFL too. That's a different thing.
He played faster in his 40 time all the time. He did that. There's no doubt about that. And then
now he has Joe Alt.
So he's got that going for him. I thought Javonte Jean-Baptiste would go a little bit higher. He was pick of the seventh round. I think I may have said fifth. I over-evaluated some of these guys. I did not follow it nearly as closely as some of the guys in the business. And I would just want to put out some predictions on draft weekend, but I was wrong. But Jean Baptiste will get a chance. He's with the Commanders, second pick of the seventh round. I don't know how high his upside is, but he sure had a great 2023 with Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's okay to be a good college player, right? Like, not everyone needs to be an amazing draft prospect, but certainly Jean-Baptiste 1 year at Notre Dame was better than a seventh round pick. But I'm a bit confused because it's not like he's 6'1".
Yeah,
you know, like he actually has a nice frame to be a prospect. So I was, maybe it was an unusually deep draft of defensive ends. I don't know.
Yeah, five went in the first, or five if you count the guy from Missouri who's 6'5", 280. Five edge rushers went in the first round. That's kind of par for the course these days, I suppose. But I thought the interesting thing about the draft this year was, and I put this in Monday Musings, 27 players were from four positions in the first round. That's nuts. Offensive line.
Like the first
quarterback, receiver, and edge
picks were offense. Defensive players didn't go for quite a while. Yeah, it was an interesting draft. Notre Dame, of course, Sam Hartman skipped the bowl game, went undrafted. Thomas Harper skipped the bowl game, went undrafted. Spencer Schrader, of course,
Hartman didn't skip the bowl game, Tim. He wanted Steve Angeli to have his chance to shine in the bowl game.
Yeah, but he was
actually dying to play. Yes.
Yeah, that's what he said. So that must have been true. Hartman signed with the Commanders. Harper signed with the Chargers. You know, they've had an overhaul in administration and head coaching, but the Chargers still like to sign, draft and sign Notre Dame players. Spencer Schrader, undrafted free agent with the Colts. Michael Vinson is a rookie mini camp invitee of the Colts. And as I mentioned, Bo Bauer was an undrafted free agent signed by the Commanders. We could go on because I'd like to talk about some other guys in the draft, but this segment's running on a little long. And then we want to talk about the slow portal activity for Notre Dame. The portal closes in a couple days. Pete, you heard that there aren't going to be any more guys, or there probably won't be any more guys from Notre Dame entering the portal.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, and this obviously can change when somebody wakes up in the morning and gets a call from their agent and be like, hey, somebody's offering X. But it didn't sound like the guys that we would have marked as like, this is somebody to watch, are leaving, at least not yet. So Notre Dame will be adding a punter, but it doesn't sound like there's going to be a lot of outgoings, if any, at this point. So I think it surprised me a little bit. I think, you know, you look at the fringe, the edge of the roster, and think like you'll lose somebody that you would rank, like in your ranking the Irish, somebody that would fall in the 75 and up or 65 and up group. But at the moment, it doesn't sound like that is in the cards.
It surprises me so much, I don't believe it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's just like, well, I think this is the expectation from somebody inside the program. I'm not saying that I agree with it or believe it, but that's the expectation.
Well, and the other thing is that, I mean, some of these guys,
medicals, they're going.
Yeah, or whatever. However they are they really saying that now, or are they just keeping guys on scholarship and you're not going to play football? I mean, they're, you know, Tyson Ford, there's not a spot for him on the roster. There's probably not a spot for, again, I hate to throw out names, but
well, Tyson Ford left the team for a while, so it's different than anybody else.
Okay, that's different with him. But I mean, is Aiden Gobira, who's injured, is he going to make a mark? Is Ty Chan going to make a mark? I mean, somebody has to leave the ranks of football scholarship and just be on an academic scholarship. And those are just some of the guys that come to mind. Micah Bell left. I don't know. Was he part of our podcast last Monday? Had that already been announced? I don't know about the timing, but somebody has to go. And it doesn't sound like, you know, we had also talked about, well, maybe if they can get an offensive tackle, or maybe if they can get it. What about the Devonis kid from Rice, the cornerback that was a possibility as a transfer into Notre Dame? Some of these things are still up in the air with a couple of days to go with the portal open.
And I don't think the portal really closes like they say it does.
Yeah, and you don't need to announce your destination while the portal's open. You just need to enter the portal, and then you can choose later. And or as a reminder, grad transfers can move anytime for any reason at any moment. So if you're looking for a grad transfer punter, they might still be on a roster somewhere right now.
Man, how good is Dallas Golden? I think he's sensational.
That's a big one.
Pete should say his line that he said on a previous podcast, because this is really important.
Yeah. So in February, I went down to Tampa to speak to the alumni club and had dinner with Dallas Golden and his dad around Tampa, and really impressed by how mature he is. Somebody who would fit into Notre Dame easily. And I think that there, I said on Twitter that he was a must have, and people are like, what do you must have? There's no like must haves, or like with all the transfer portals, is anyone really a must have? And I'm like, yes, this is one, because there aren't a lot of prospects out there as athletic and talented as Dallas Golden. And there aren't a lot of prospects out there that are a better fit for Notre Dame than Dallas Golden. And there sure as hell aren't many prospects out there who are both at once. And so that's, somebody like Dallas Golden is on profile for somebody that you want on the field in the college football playoff. And he's on profile for somebody you want as a Notre Dame student athlete the other 360 days of the year. So that's, there aren't many guys out there. And if Notre Dame wants to compete at the highest level, they need to sign more Dallas Goldens. And when one comes online like this one did, you have to get him. And they did. So, I would say also spending time with him and his dad, Chad Bowden came up a lot in the conversation. So that was a key factor for Notre Dame getting him.
I think he's a spectacular athlete. I went back and looked at my film review from January. We re-ran it on Irish Illustrated when it was announced yesterday. I watched him again. I looked at my review. It's glowing, and I wouldn't change anything about it, including the reference to, and I'm not saying he's Allen Iverson, but when you saw Allen Iverson play quarterback in high school, that's what this kid looks like. He just dominates the football field. Tremendous catch for Notre Dame. It doesn't get as much reaction as when Notre Dame gets a verbal commitment from a couple 3 stars in a row, because that gets a lot of conversation. But this is an outstanding football player. Outstanding athlete, and with Pete Sampson filling in the rest of the details, makes him a perfect fit for Notre Dame.
I would say, just like in general, the people say like excited about commitments, and just like we just cover them. But there are a few guys in the class where you're like, I really look forward to seeing that guy in practice.
Yep.
KVA, CJ Carr, Micah Gilbert, Cam Williams. This is one of those guys. You know, Bryce Young, Dallas Golden is one of those guys who you think like, this guy can come in and play right away, maybe. But even if he doesn't, I can't wait to see what he looks like in a Notre Dame uniform.
Either side of the football would work. I think Notre Dame will choose the defensive side. I think that's where he can be the most impactful.
And I think what Tim was trying to say by the Allen Iverson comparison was that they don't need Marcus Burton back anymore either, because they have Dallas Golden. So they're good. Let's roll. Wouldn't that be nice?
No, they do need Marcus Burton back. Hey, it's a long segment one, wrapping it up. I spent the weekend in Minneapolis, Notre Dame Club of Minneapolis. Shout out to those folks. It was wonderful. Morrissey's Irish Pub in Minneapolis, had a great time, and would love to go back next year if they have me. Segment two coming up, Burning Up the Boards.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first is from Kay Beasley. Since the NFL draft is fresh, what round floor and ceiling would you project Riley Leonard? Who's the next round one offensive lineman on the roster? An additional question from KB.
Are you guys ready to predict about what round Riley Leonard's going to? I need to see him play at Notre Dame. I'm not sure. I think there's a bunch of ability there, and he has size. He has athleticism. He has to prove how accurate he is throwing the football while playing for Notre Dame. So I don't know there. I don't have a guess. Maybe you guys do. As far as Notre Dame offensive lineman, round one, I don't think there is one on the roster right now, unless Billy Shrouth is a rare guard chosen in the first round.
If he's the best guard
in the country,
then he goes in the 25 to 32 range for sure.
I don't have any real point of reference right now. He started 3 games for Notre Dame. So it's a good question, Kay Beasley. I don't even know where to begin with Riley Leonard. It's just, he has so much to prove here coming up. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Think back of where if you had said Sam Hartman will go undrafted after Notre Dame started 4-0 last year.
I, I wrote something similar to that. Yes.
So it, who knows where Leonard ends up? There's going to be highs and lows of his season. But yeah, he's got a ton to prove in terms of the next offensive lineman who is a first round pick. I mean, that's, it's hard to be drafted on the interior in the first round. It's not hard to be an edge player, but, you know, Charles Jagasaw has a long way to go. Gerby Lambert isn't even here.
I was going to say, it could be Gerby Lambert, who we haven't seen yet, so I'm not going to say he's going to be a first.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't know, which is fine, because nobody does.
I feel the same way I did about Riley Leonard last year. I just was so impressed with him as a college football player. But when someone said before he got hurt, he was a potential first-round pick, I never considered that. So I won't consider it until I see him play for Notre Dame and look like a first round passer. He's a first round runner, athlete. He's a great runner, and he's tough. Sure.
Yeah, and like in terms of Hartman not getting drafted, I mean, Riley Leonard has a much better group of receivers to throw the football to, so that will assist him in ways that only Jordan Faison could help.
And he's bigger and stronger. Like, Hartman's the best passer I've seen there. That wasn't strong, Clawson was a better passer than Hartman, but I always compare their body types. Like, Hartman just wasn't that strong of an athlete compared to Riley Leonard, is a very strong player. DeShone Kizer was a very strong player. Like, even Golson, although he was smallish, you didn't grab Golson and throw him around. You know, I just felt like, I always thought, I mean, Clawson's better. I don't mean to compare him to Clawson. Clawson's a great passer, but the problem with Clawson for me going to the NFL was, if you grab Clawson by the waist in college, he was sacked. So what's going to happen in the NFL?
Yeah,
Hartman runs into not as good of a passer as Jimmy Clawson.
Yeah, I think he'll run into the same issues.
Yeah, like as far as first round draft choices, I mean, maybe it's Gerby Lambert, maybe it's Will Black. I don't know. That's, now we're really getting ahead.
Dallas Golden.
It's Dallas Golden. There you
wait,
go.
Wait, no, he doesn't play Benjamin Morrison. Lines.
Benjamin Morrison is the next first round draft pick at Notre Dame. That will be my prediction for this.
That one I think is quite likely. But remember, was it last week? We asked a question, who would go first, Alt or him? And he's not. I don't
can't go higher than five.
Yeah, I don't see that happening with Ben.
Unless you're Riley Leonard.
question from FL Irish 76, with the portal coming to a close Tuesday. Are you surprised there hasn't been more movement within Notre Dame and nationally?
Out of Notre Dame, yes. I actually thought into Notre Dame would take a while, like it always has in the summer. You figure good player, we always use Nick McLeod, but there's players that aren't great. There are good players like Devin Ford came in later. What's his name came in later from Rhode Island? Antonio Carter came in later. So I think that's guys get added. I'm surprised some guys didn't leave yet just to get their names in the portal, but guess they're not. A lot of the guys we've identified are maybe aren't graduating seniors yet until they go through summer school in the fall. So they want to stay in school and get that. There will be some juniors that are not playing for Notre Dame next year, but they lost a lot of seniors in the December swing.
Yeah, I'm surprised that I have a couple more outgoing, but I think everyone's sort of in a similar boat. There just has not been a ton of movement. I think this portal has been more about the back half of your roster, and the first portal was more about the front half of your roster, which makes sense in the sense of, like, you spend your money in the first window, and then there isn't a lot to go around in the second window. And I think that's why you sort of see a little bit less movement.
Do you guys think that there's been like a national realization that the portal isn't as, you know, promising for a lot of guys? That they put their name in a portal and they stay there? Or, I mean, you know, nobody's reaching out to them. Has it just reached a point where the numbers are so great that it's just like, you know, why am I doing this? I'm not necessarily going to benefit from doing it. It's so oversaturated that not everybody can be picked up out of the portal.
No, that's true.
It's a buyer's market. I think that's, do I have that analogy right? Like, there's, I don't know, but there's more players in the portal than there are spots. And I think like I said earlier, it's just like the appetite for filling up your roster is immediate. So you're doing it in December and January. By the time April rolls around, it just, I don't know. I think the desire to find a sixth receiver or a fifth corner isn't the same as finding a new starting quarterback.
The question we can never have answered from Marcus Freeman, or probably most head coaches with ethics, would be, do you really like where you are 87 players going into the offseason? Because you know you can find a way to move two. If you have to move three, you can do that. If you have to move four, you can probably do that. But you're not at 81.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I bet he likes his spot of 87 right now.
Yeah. A question from ND025876. Post-spring, it is clear that this team has championship-level starters and championship-level depth at many positions, but the O-line is arguably not even top 25 caliber. What can Notre Dame do between now and fall camp to remedy this? Does the Notre Dame coaching staff see this as urgent?
I disagree with not being top 25 caliber without comparing 24 offensive lines to Notre Dame's.
You stopped me from asking you to name the 25.
I would like to have, I think a lot of teams would like to have Schroff, Craig, and a competition between a guy they started last year and a guy that started last year at left guard. And if you said your offensive tackles are unproven, but they both started the bowl game and did fine, one guy was a top 120 and one guy was a top 100.
Jaugason was your top rated composite player.
I'd take it. And their backup, and your backup tackle is another top 150 tackle that just is a great athlete, but isn't quite big enough yet. I think everybody in the world would take that. And that doesn't mean you can block Georgia. I'm saying top 25 is different than blocking Michigan of 2023.
Yeah. What can they do about it? Develop.
Yeah, there's no shortcuts here. I mean, there's no button to push. If the portal had offensive tackles from which to choose that you felt could be in competition for a starting job, you would press one of those buttons, but it apparently doesn't. So there's no shortcut. You just keep coaching. You've got good players. You've got highly ranked players. You do have, like you said, Tim, I mean, you got Coogan and Spindler competing there. That's a good thing. Ashton Craig is going to be a very good center. Mm-hmm. Billy Schrauth is going to be a very good guard. Emil Wagner could end up being the guy that emerges, and then you put him at left tackle, move Jaugason to right tackle, and now you think, you know what? That's a little bit better than we thought.
They might have three positions, all interior, better over 12 games than those three positions were last year, center and both guards. Coogan could be better than Coogan. Spindler could be better than Coogan. Schroth will be better than Schroth. And Craig could be better than Correll. And the tackles probably won't be better than the tackles. My random guess.
Probably not.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, if you saw the blue goal game and you heard about what we said from the scrimmage the week before, it sounds a little desperate at tackle, but I'm here to tell you that there are a lot of other power four schools that have it worse off along the offensive line than Notre Dame does. And then when you add all the positives that they have and the depth that we've talked about and written about, they'll be okay. There'll be moments. They're going to face some good pass rushers. There'll be moments, just like every offensive line that not, and it's not just Notre Dame, believe it or not. There are other offensive lines that take a while to gel, and Notre Dame's will at times as well.
You are the first person, it's happened twice, and I have now stolen it, to reference the Power Four.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. If you want kudos for that, there you go.
I will. You know, there's only two left from that.
Yep.
What used to be the Pac-8 and the Pac-10 and the Pac-12 is now the no conference.
Two-pack.
Yeah. from Dan Quinlan, would you take over or under 2.5 for the number of different guys who start at quarterback this season if you include the bowl/playoff games? Is it more likely Riley Leonard starts every regular season game or that at least two other guys start games at quarterback? I believe this comes down to if you're in the bowl or the playoff, though.
Yeah, it's an interesting question when you throw in including bowl playoffs. Does Riley Leonard sit out? Where is Notre Dame? Are they in the playoffs? How deep are they in the playoffs? Et cetera, et cetera. I would say at 2.5 is a better, I would take under. But there's CJ Carr sitting out there and four competent quarterbacks and none have entered the portal. It's a good question, but I'll take under 2.5.
I'll take under, but I do think two quarterbacks will start a game for Notre Dame this season.
I do, too. I think the over has to be two quarterbacks start a game. One of them can no longer compete by the end of the year, and the other one decides to go pro or transfers, and then you automatically have a third quarterback. Yeah. So that's the way to look at that. I don't know why, if Riley Leonard and Steve Angeli start this year and Notre Dame makes a bowl game instead of the playoff, and Riley Leonard elects to skip the bowl game, Steve Angeli wouldn't just start.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand the perception about Riley Leonard and health, but this all really stems from the catastrophic, pretty catastrophic injury that he suffered against Notre Dame, and then they did a surgery, and frankly, the surgery didn't quite work out the way they had anticipated. So, I mean, do we really have reason to believe that Leonard is more likely to get hurt? I guess because he's a runner and he
That's
is
coming with
the injury. Yeah, I mean, I get that, but it's a good question. But I think 2.5 is a good number, and it's hard for me to just say three are going to play or start. Question from CMU Pens fan who asks a lot of questions, and we use a lot of them, but I thought this was a good one too, like always. I don't know CMU.
You don't have to apologize for.
Well, I know, like remember a while back when somebody said, you know, just all I have to do is pretend like I'm CMU Pens fan.
Yes, that was funny. That was actually very well done.
I don't know CMU Pens fan. He's a loyal question contributor, as are a lot of other people, but anyway, I digress. Question: what interview this spring from the players served to be the most enlightening so far?
Reno Monteforte was the most entertaining interview. Is that probably not enlightening for the football team, but he's a great interview.
One of the questions I was asked this weekend in Minneapolis was best sound bites.
He's too
present for me to have thought of him, but
I would say Max Bull is my answer here, and Jaden Osbury is 1B or 2 behind Max Bull. Max Bull, because I needed to be enlightened on his players and his position. I didn't know about the players in the position. Well, I wanted to know everything about them.
And he's pretty darn enlightening, isn't he? I mean, I think he does a good job. Pete, you missed
I missed pretty much all of them, but I think I was around for Jason Onyeh, who I enjoy every time he comes in.
Yes.
And that was it.
Okay.
I think I was here for offensive line, defensive line. And then
did you miss Reno Monteforte?
I have spoken to Reno Monteforte, however, and I did enjoy that interview when I had it, because I think he was, even before, I think he had sort of a Riley Leonard vibe where, like, maybe his grandmother told him that he sucked at long snapping or something when he was practicing in his yard in New York or New Jersey. But he was fun.
Well,
I'm glad that translated.
If he wins the job, he's going to get multiple interview opportunities because he's 5'7". Is that what he is?
Yeah. And they are not lying.
Yeah. No, he's 5'7", but he's very entertaining. But I like this question because using the word enlightening,
yep.
For me, the Jalen Snead interview was enlightening, and it may not prove to be true, but I thought the interview with Jalen Snead was uniquely enlightening when it came to him. And then to hear Bulla and to ask Marcus Freeman about him and for him to have comments, for me, that was the most enlightening. Some of the other interviews that stood out for me. And again, you know, we talk about this all the time. Some of us focus on a few guys. You can't talk to all of them because there's usually six or seven guys sitting.
Yeah, more came out this year too. They doubled up.
Right. But for me, Sean Sevillano, and he flashed in the blue gold game. It's a kid who knows what he wants, knows what's ahead of him, understands the possibilities. And I have a pretty high degree of confidence that he will reach that ability, but he's obviously going to have to change his body a little bit before he gets there. And I guess Mitchell Evans, just his desire to be a captain for Notre Dame and how important that is to him, his desire to get a degree from Notre Dame, which meant that injury or no injury, he was going to stay this year, which is essentially what he said. And just, you know, wanting to be, feeling that it's important that he becomes a leader of this team. I really enjoy talking to Mitchell Evans and look forward to talking to him again.
Dylan McCullough often introduces interesting concepts to the interview too, about how he grades, and he throws out that, was it Aeneas Williams got 100, got a perfect grade for a practice. And his mom called him up. He was all excited that Aeneas got 100. And then he's like, and he hasn't had one since. It was just a great way to say it.
And then comes practice 8 of the spring.
Yeah, it was like practice 8, and he didn't have another one. But of course not. I mean, 100's hard to do. So I've always thought, I mean, we learned a lot from Dylan McCullough last year because we realized Jabron Payne's going to play a lot when we talked to Dylan McCullough.
Yeah.
We might have been wrong had we not spoken to him about that.
No, you're right. He is a great interview.
And Riley Leonard. A great interview.
He's about as genuine as it gets, right? I mean, he's a Christian kid, and he's not afraid to say it, and he's just a pretty down-to-earth kid.
Let's hope he's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all there is.
They won't care about what a good interview is and how Christian he is if he doesn't play well. So anyway, question from Maltese Irish. While Deion Colsey's success against Christian Gray in the blue goal game can be viewed as encouraging, could Christian Gray allowing Colsey to have said success be considered as concerning? I actually responded to this question on the thread.
Yeah, I just thought it was good for Colsey that he was having a good first half because he was turning around. Yeah, he caught normal passes. One was contested. He made a nice contested catch.
One contested catch, but everything was like stop routes and the zone defense and no blitzing linebackers. And I didn't think, I mean, he caught a few passes. I didn't think that it exposed Christian Gray.
I thought it was good for Colsey, yeah. though. Like yeah. if Colsey, I would have thought Colsey would have caught one pass for 6 yards in the blue goal.
I understand the question, but from our perspective, you know, Christian Gray wasn't exposed for any shortcomings by Deion Colsey.
You know, if we had seen the same thing the week prior, maybe I would entertain this question, but we didn't. You know, that was sort of the one time we saw Colsey do that, which is good for him.
Golden was ultra aggressive in the Jersey scrimmage, and the linebackers stayed put. It was mainly the defensive ends having success against the tackles and. You know, not so much in a passing game. That was not my impression Christian Gray was not playing well last Saturday.
Christian Gray tangent from our board. I wanted to kind of point this out. I said at the end of our podcast, Cam Hart, the fifth year senior, and Benjamin Morrison and Thomas Harper are probably going to be missed the way they played last year. I love Christian Gray. We like Jaden Mickey, and now we like Jordan Clark. And let's say Morrison's back healthy. And someone said that's not fair. You have to compare Cam Hart, the junior, to Christian Gray, the junior. And I said, no, I don't, because he played last year as a fifth year senior and I'm comparing him to last year. If there's a fall off, that could be the reason, but there's still a fall off. If someone catches balls on Christian Gray, you're not going to go, well, he's a junior. I mean, of course he got him. Cam Hart wasn't that good until his fifth year. All matters is the ball was caught on Christian Gray, if it's caught on him or Benjamin Morrison or Jordan Clark. Cam Hart was great last year for Notre Dame.
Are you saying Christian Gray, he's a sophomore, isn't he?
Yes, he is a sophomore. Sorry. But that's still the point.
Okay.
It doesn't matter that he's still a sophomore. He is playing on the football field. No, if you put him out there, you're still playing. Like when someone says he's going to be great, he's a freshman offensive tackle. Look how good he'll be someday. All right, but he just got beat. So that's why you don't want the freshman offensive tackle.
I think he'll have a fine sophomore.
Me too. I just think Cam Hart was phenomenal, and we might forget that.
Right, and then maybe leave after 2025, like Ben Morrison. Hopefully. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope there's a string of juniors leaving Notre Dame at corner drafted in the first couple rounds all the time, and that the fifth-year guys get drafted in the fifth round every time. It would be great defense for Notre Dame.
Go ahead, Tim.
BL Caseburn also gets on this list a lot, as it turns out. Any chance the Notre Dame pass rush is so good that it's making the offensive tackles look average?
I think that was the case for the Jersey scrimmage because Golden was throwing everything at them. And that's part of what makes L. Golden's defense so good. You don't know where it's coming from. You've got veteran players, so they're more effective in executing their various blitzes. But I don't think that was the case in the blue gold game. You've got some issues. You got to get better. And again, like I said, we said earlier with the previous question, there's no shortcuts. You just got to work at it all summer, get in better shape. Lauren Lando will play a key role in that. But I don't think that was the case in the blue gold game.
No, I don't think so either. I think your point about Golden the week prior was spot on. Like, I think that as much as there was a talent disparity between those positions, there was also like a coordinator disparity between those positions in terms of what, you know, Al Golden is doing, like PhD level stuff, and Mike Denbrock still kind of getting the 101. Yep. So, yep. And that's fine. But the offensive tackles are not as good as the defensive ends, but I don't think the defensive ends are Ross Bronner and Justin Tuck either.
That'd be cool, though. They were together. Yeah,
that'd be fun to watch.
Question from Terry Benedict. Knowing what you know about the incoming freshmen, how would you re-rank the group heading into the fall? I don't know if you guys had an opportunity to look up how you rated guys.
I was just about to do that before the podcast started an hour early. If you guys, okay.
Well, I'll give my top 10 while you look that up. If you have a chance. I was going to pick Gerby Lambert first, but I didn't. I picked Kingston Viliamuasa number one, followed by Lambert. Number three was Bryce Young. Number four was Cam Williams. Number five was Aeneas Williams. Number six was CJ Carr. Number seven was Micah Gilbert. Eight was Logan Thomas. Nine was Kedron Young. 10 was Logan Saldate, and then I want to include these next two. 11 was Anthony Knapp, and 12 was Sean Sevillano. I generally rank quarterbacks lower.
Me too.
Because out of the gate, I don't feel comfortable just ranking them too high. So I had.
And now
I would put him up in a group of three with KVA and Bryce Young.
Okay.
Cam Williams, I knew Cam Williams wasn't going to be ready to hit the ground running as a freshman. At Gilbert number seven, Cam Williams four. I would probably flip them now, but I essentially knew that then. I don't know. That's
well, you're trying to do their careers though. You're not trying to do their first two.
Yeah,
years,
that's so. True. No, that's true. Logan Thomas is hurt, so. You know, if we were doing it now, we probably wouldn't put him number eight because he didn't play. You know, and that's the other thing, that we're comparing guys that are that were here and that aren't here. I don't know. I'm okay essentially with what I had there. Cole Mullins, I had 16. I might bump him up a little bit. I was happy with Knapp and Sevillano at 11, 12. One guy that I've heard a lot of positive things about, looking forward to seeing, is Tabron Benny Powell. Mm-hmm. I had him last. I didn't like some of his film. He might be a guy that they look at as a nickel moving forward.
Go ahead, Pete.
I would say I did not rank these in the summer or winter when you guys did this, but I would have Carr number one. And then I'd have KVA two, Young three, Gilbert four, Lambert five, Cam Williams six. After that, it's a little bit murky for me. Although I think the guy that I was like, I think he's fine, but oh, actually he's got a chance to be really good is Cole Mullins. I'm not sure what they had in Cole Mullins when they signed him. I know people liked him more than his ranking, but watching him in spring ball, you're like, okay, I can see where that's going. Might take a couple years to get there, but it seems interesting to me now in a different way.
I had KVA one, Aeneas Williams, obviously. Two, CJ Carr three. I would probably go ahead and move CJ Carr to two and keep Aeneas Williams at three. I had Gerby Lambert four, Kedron Young five. Cam Williams I had ahead of Gilbert. I would have Gilbert ahead of Cam Williams. I had Bronte Johnson at eight. And I have no reason to change it because I haven't seen him play since then. So there's nothing I can do here. But I would move Bryce Young up from nine to five.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to pick one, Pete, I mean, CJ Carr was so impressive when we had a chance to see him, but KBA is too. So I would, you know, those would be, I'd have them in a tie for first, I think, one on offense, one on defense.
Different jobs. I mean, if CJ Carr's the best at his position on Notre Dame's schedule one year, it's different than KVA being the best at his position on Notre Dame's schedule one year.
Right.
Yeah, you know, Sean Sevillano is somebody that I probably wouldn't have had in my top 10 in January or December, but I definitely would now.
Yeah, and he's not even, you know, and that's a guy that he still needs some work to. He'll be better 15 pounds from now.
I think he'll be better 15 pounds, like the right 15 pounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He'll
go down to come back up.
Right.
This isn't fair because I've seen Bryce Young and not Logan Thomas, but I had Bryce Young right behind Logan Thomas, and I have Bryce Young ahead of Logan Thomas now, whether I've seen Logan Thomas healthy or not.
Yeah,
it doesn't like, yeah, you don't even need to see them practice to know that.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap up with a question from Martin Evenflo. Trepidation about the offensive tackle situation aside, when was the last time you felt this good about a Notre Dame team going into a season?
2020, I had him going undefeated in the regular season and losing to Clemson in the ACC championship game and then making the playoff, losing to Alabama. So I felt really good about that season good and call. How it played out.
Good call.
Okay. It's been 4 years. I thought the 2020 team would be in the playoff or right there. It was. I thought 2015 was going to be really good. They were. Those are probably the two most recent ones. 2018, I can't sit here and say that I thought they were going to go undefeated when that season started.
Tim, didn't we all kind of think they were going to go undefeated when we watched the Stanford game? That was the first time. We were like, oh boy, this team in 2018.
Yeah. But like preseason, no.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah. It was okay. Like, I mean, once they got by Michigan, you're like, oh, okay, it's kind of opening up for them a little bit. And then they smoked Stanford, who we thought was good. Turns out.
That was my point. I thought Stanford
was a top 10 win, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Right? Yeah, it was a top 10 win. Didn't feel like it later. But I've got to say 2020 also, and I realize it was a pandemic and we didn't really know what the hell was going to happen, whether they're going to play or not. And maybe this is more in retrospect. I actually talked about in Minneapolis that when you saw the way Notre Dame handled the pandemic from Jack Swarbrick and his leadership and he provided to Brian Kelly and having the team ready. And again, I don't know that people have a full appreciation of what these guys, and not just Notre Dame, everybody across the board, what they were dealing with. You can't get dressed in the locker room at the same time and you can't have meetings with this many people at the same time. It had to be horrible for a player and coach because, you know, as we always say about our jobs, I mean, the game's hard enough without all those other things making it more difficult. And I don't know when I really realized it, but at some point I realized, man, Notre Dame has got to be better prepared for this than most people are. And you don't know that you're preparing for it until you're preparing for it, you know, and it was so disjointed and out of the ordinary. But for me, it was 2020. And I, you know, at a certain point, it's like they're going to win. They're going to win all their games because they're good and they're prepared to do this.
I mean, they had a fifth-year starting quarterback. And this is their starting offensive line. Eichenberg, Hainsey, Kramer, Banks, Patterson.
They're all
returning. Not a new starter in that group. They all had started the year prior. Like, it was almost impossible for them not to be good. And they were quite good. That was,
and they had a random dude that we did not see at all in the famous March 5th practice that year, nor any of the summer because we didn't see any training camp, named Kyren Williams, who emerged as a running back. And he was the best player on the team for me that year. He was a revelation how good he was. Remember, somewhere in August, someone's like, well, Kyren Williams is going to start. I was like, oh, that makes sense. That's a good idea. Let's work everybody else in. Nope. Kyren Williams is the best player.
Yeah, and they took a transfer receiver from Northwestern who was an NFL prospect. Who's ever heard of that?
All right,
and so they had Jordan Johnson. Remember that?
April 29th, are they going to go undefeated in 2024 this fall?
I'd say no.
O'Malley and I are scared.
If my question is undefeated or no, I'll just say no.
Yeah.
I don't want to be.
O'Malley and I are concerned that they're going to be 0-1, but that's just a typical go on the road. A&M, Mike Elko, it's going to be an absolute, I can't wait. It's going to be an absolute.
I'm not sure if CJ Carr is ready for that moment. That's my concern, guys. That's all I'm concerned about.
It's going to be a madhouse in College Station when Notre Dame comes to town. So
I mean, look, it's a lot of fun. This team didn't play very well on the road last year. So I'm kind of like, yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to say what I'm about to say. I'll save it for a future podcast.
Yeah, because we have time for you to say that now. Yep. So try to save things. We should just cut them off. And anytime you want to say something now, just save it for the next week.
All right, we're cutting you off. We're cutting you off. Our next podcast is going to be Monday, May 6th. We will continue to monitor the portal and what happens with the Notre Dame roster, and then O'Malley and myself and the rest of the Irish Illustrated staff is going to come up with a countdown from 90 to 1 or whatever we end up having, Tim.
Right now, it'd be 87. We have to use Reno Monteforte as the long snapper of choice so far. It might be 88. We've done 88 and 89 before.
Yeah. You got your list in order?
I have my positions in order. I don't have my list in order. Like, I did all the positions, and then it gets hard. So I start at the top, and then I go to the bottom, and then you have to try to figure out the rest.
Well, yeah, the top's easier to figure out than the bottom.
Well, I mean, I can figure out 89 to 86.
Yeah, yeah. And people are a little bit more concerned about 1 through 25 than they are 25 through.
Hey, we were the most off we've ever been was Joe Alt, a non-early enrollee offensive lineman when they had Blake Fisher starting at left tackle already in his class. And they also had Carmody and Tosh Baker. And we just figured he'd be the fourth string tackle. He was for a minute.
Yeah, for a minute. He moved up pretty quickly. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. We went long today. Hope you enjoyed it. Until next week, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider.